Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for being with us. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We begin with some unsurprising local news, given the amount of rain we've had over the past few weeks. There's more expected in scattered showers today throughout the area. The Baltimore City Department of Public Works, in coordination with Baltimore County, Harford County, Howard County, and Carroll County, has lifted the voluntary water restrictions that have been in place since the beginning of May. Justin Fenton of the Baltimore Banner has pointed out on X that in 2022, Baltimore ended the first half of the year with 179 homicides, the worst first half of a year on record since 1970. Monday of this week marked the end of the first half of 2025. All right, that's 3 years later. The first half of this year ended with 68 homicides, which is the fewest on record. Today on Midday, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins us on Zoom. Mr. Mayor, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So these numbers about the homicides and the non-fatal shootings are very, very good. They continue a trend that's been in place now for a couple of years. But there were three incidents that are tragic and very much a cause for concern among many in the community. And that has to do with recent incidences in which police responded to people that appeared to be in behavioral or mental health crisis. There were three people who, separate incidents, who died. Dante Maurice Melton was one of them. There's a 70-year-old woman named Piotr Karcha Clark Brooks, and then an Arab rider and owner, B.J. Abdullah. Given the great strides that we're making, in violent crime overall, what is your level of confidence about the BPD's crisis response mechanisms that are in place, the crisis response training, and the crisis response capacity?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for that, Tom. Let me first start where I think we always should in these circumstances, and that is that for those families and those communities, that our thoughts are with them, because these types of incidents rip at the heart of a city, and everyone involved really feels that pain. So our hearts are with those families and those communities who are grieving right now. But with that being said, I also don't want us to conflate these incidents, because they are very different circumstances in all of them.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Office of the Attorney General is investigating both of the police-involved shootings and the in-custody death, so I'm never going to get a hit of that. But as we determine exactly what happened, what we do know is that we are taking steps to improve support and emergency response for those experiencing mental health crisis, right? You can look and see the work that, even through our consent decree, the behavioral health portion of it is one that this department has made significant strides on. The city itself, our 911 diversion program, Tom, has won two awards in recent years, and we have a long way to go. That's why we're investing in 911 diversion to 988, clinicians that are embedded at 911 centers, co-responder models, crisis intervention training to that. And we now, in a few short time, have more than 20% of patrol officers that are CIT certified. All these efforts combined will help us make a system that is more coordinated and more prepared to deal with these realities.
The Baltimore Beat is reporting that there's a single crisis response team for the whole city. And if there's more than one crisis event happening concurrently, that team has to decide which incident they're going to respond.
You're talking about solely from BPD, correct? That's what you're talking about?
Right, yes.
Right. I think, but the investments that we're making are not into BPD, right? You're talking about our investments in working with Baltimore Crisis Response, BCRI, right? I think that and having the ability to divert calls away from police to places like BCRI is something that we have been improving in recent years. And I think that that's my hope is that we talk about this as a complete system, right? Because it's not, for me, this supporting those in crisis and making sure they get the appropriate response, not just the fastest or familiar one. It's not just about the police department. It's about building a larger system. It's not just about the fire department, because as you know, they take a lot of these calls as well. And that's why we have to build all of those efforts. That's why, we actually it got deferred for a meeting, but we have investments going into 988 that we're at the BOE today, right? We have to continue investing in all of those things, not just the policing part of it. We have come a long way, but we have a long way to go. And we know everyone has seen the footage from the incident at Pennsylvania and Lawrence. There's no ambiguity in that one, right? While this was a horrible tragedy, as I said then and I'll say again, we cannot and will not allow individuals to carry and use illegal guns against police or anyone else. And we continue to be engaged with that neighborhood through Muncie and others, and we'll work with the community as we always have on these types of efforts, but also the efforts that have led us to having, as you alluded to in your opening, the lowest amount of violence on record through the first 6 months of Baltimore's history.
As I understand it, again from reporting in the Baltimore Beat, between 2021 and 2025, so that 4 year period, there are about 4,000 crisis calls, about 18% of which were not able to be diverted. The police were involved in 44% of those calls during that period. The goal was to train the force, the BPD. And again, you make a fair point that it's not just BPD that's involved in your systemic approach to this, and that's good. But when it comes to police training in particular, consent decree originally had a goal of 30% of the force being trained specifically in crisis response. That goal's, as I understand, it's been lowered to about 20%, and we're still not there. We're only at about 10% of the force. Given the fact that the force itself, according to the commissioner who comes on the show, as you know, very regularly, he still says he's down 500 or 600 officers. Is that going to be enough to handle the clear need for crisis response from a police perspective, and how that capacity, which appears to be a little limited, fits into that larger system that you're talking about?
Well, I guess I think, again, Tom, I want to just state again, I stated this earlier when responding. We're now at more than 20% of our patrol officers that are crisis CIT certified and want to continue to work on that, right? And I think that it's important to note that obviously there are many reasons, but if you look at the 4 years prior to that and where we were as far as diversion, it's a big significant difference. But I think you bring up a point in just talking about that, and that's about how we have to continue to also invest in growing the capacity of these organizations, BCRI. We're standing up, obviously, in the health department, a division that's going to be working on similar things when we talk about behavioral health responses. We have to be investing in those folks as well, because having a diversion program is great, but not being able to have the capacity to divert means that you still have a long way to go. And there's many factors that come into play about why BPD will respond versus others. Obviously, weapons and all of those things play a part in that. We're going to continue to make those investments in accordance with the consent decree, but more importantly, because it's the right thing to do. But I don't really want to go. We can talk about this probably later. Have me talk about this maybe later on in a different time. But also, we have to understand with the proposed cuts to the health system, also it's going to reverberate through many things, and that's including this, the responses and how we get people help, which has happened obviously from the federal level down. We really have to be thinking about ways to make these investments and also understand what possibly could be happening if the big ugly bill passes.
And it seems that it is, in fact, on its way to doing just that. No word on that yet today, but Speaker Mike Johnson making a concerted effort to get it done by the 4th of July, which is Friday. Mayor Brandon Scott is my guest. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org if you have a question or comment for the mayor. And Mr. Mayor, I want to ask you about your reorganization of your cabinet and some folks at the Department of Public Works. The former Department of Public Works head, Khalil Zayed, has been promoted to deputy mayor for operations, and then some various people within the DPW, most particularly Matthew Garbark, has been named the new director of DPW. What's behind those kinds of moves? There are a couple of other people who've been promoted from within the DPW to higher positions as well. What's behind those moves?
Yeah, it's about making sure that the residents of Baltimore have the best public servants and the best team working for them and making the government work better for them. We're grateful to have so many dedicated public servants on our team. And I said this early in a press conference, but obviously you guys are on the air here. We also announced today that Dr. DeRaza is coming back into her role as the deputy mayor as well. We're grateful to have her come back. When you're talking about director and soon to be deputy mayor Zayed, you're talking about someone obviously that has went into DPW when it was at its lowest point and in crisis and got that ship righted. And now you can hear from the workers a different tone. Now we're asking him to elevate that service to all our operational agencies. And I think it's important to note that the soon to be deputy mayor has the experience of running DPW and running DOT and working in DGS. So having someone with that direct experience and allowing him to bring that leadership to all of those operational agencies, he's still going to be working with DPW every single day. Obviously, the new director will be reporting directly to him. This is about making sure that we have the best team providing the best service for the residents of Baltimore, and I am extremely confident in them.
The deputy director of the Department of Transportation was let go, as we understand it, through some reporting at the Baltimore Brew last week. Stuart Sirota was let go. Evidently, there was some dissatisfaction with the pace of having repaving done on a number of streets. Can you give us any insight into what was going on there? There's been a lot of upheaval at the Department of Transportation over the last few years.
Right. Well, I think that, hold on one second, Tom, fire truck is going past.
Yeah, we're fine on this end. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I didn't know if you could hear it. It was very, very loud. But I think a few things. Director McBeth was brought in an experienced transportation and professional coming in from the Federal Department of Transportation to right that ship and to put the people in place that could deliver the services that were needed for the residents of Baltimore. And the thing that her and I talked about the most was, and when she came in, was repaving. I want to state that there have been no delays this year, right? All timelining for this year, resurfacing started a month ahead of where we started in 2024. The in-house crews obviously do the smaller roads, and that is now happening. We're talking about repaving 100 lane miles this year, which is the largest that we had in many years. Obviously, just for your listeners, the neighborhood streets are done by DOT's in-house crews. If you live on a side street, those are the ones that are doing that work. I've seen them doing it. I'll be joining them in doing it again this summer. And then we have contractors who do the major work on the major roads, whether that's Flanagan, M. Louise, Gray and Son, those individuals, and their work is going to be happening as well alongside. And you folks can see all around the city that there's a lot of sidewalk and apron work being done for ADA. They're going to continue to do that. But the director has my full confidence to make sure that she has the team that she believes is working in the best interest of Baltimore's residents.
Some of the Biden money for infrastructure was to come to the city of Baltimore. Is any of that money in danger, given the fact that there's now a Trump administration?
Well, as of right now, we have not had any of that happen. But obviously, Tom, we're going to continuously be monitoring that for, you know, Highway to Nowhere or West Baltimore United, all of those things. We hope that doesn't happen, because many of these kind of projects that we're talking about are the very kind of projects that the administration say they want to focus on.
When it comes to the delivery of city services, you announced about a month ago, a month and a half, that you were overhauling the 311 system and the CityStat system. When it comes to systems like the permit system, there was supposedly a new permit system that went into effect, allowing people to apply online for their permits. But the Baltimore Banner reporting about a month ago that half as many permits were issued in the first half of this year as the same period in 2024. There were 9,941 permits issued for construction projects and demolition and that kind of stuff. That's the fewest since the city began publishing the records of permits in its database about 10 years ago. So that system, that newly revised system, doesn't appear to be running as, you know, efficaciously as you'd like. What can you tell us about that, and what are you doing to hurry that along?
Yeah, Tom, we know that that system, as you and I talked about from my time coming to city government, there were many systems into the mayor's office that had to be changed. This system had to be changed. It collapsed applications options from 19 to 5. Moving to 5 options really resulted in a host of additional questions to be answered by the applicant. The questions just were not intuitive and result in the applicant making wrong selections. The permit system has a built-in logic model, so depending on how people responded to those questions, selected trigger some reviews that may or may not have been needed. That added to the processing time. But let me be very clear, what I have instructed the city administrator and the deputy city administrator to do is that we have a tiger team led by the DCA, by the deputy city administrator, Shamaya Kearney. Currently, they are conducting the analysis of permit application to determine application status and action steps. So, and we're going to continue that work. But I've made clear to the folks at housing, the deputy mayor for economic development, all of those involved in this process, in creating this process, that folks have to fix it and fix it in post haste, or folks will be looking for other employment.
We have an email from a listener, ask what's up with the health commissioner with all the HHS shenanigans going on. Having a permanent leader in this role is crucial. I can answer that for you. Mr. Mayor Dr. Michelle Taylor has been appointed the new health commissioner of the city of Baltimore, and she'll begin work at the beginning of August. We're almost out of time, but let's go to the phones to Eric, who's on the line in Baltimore. Eric, what's your quick question for the Baltimore mayor, Brandon Scott?
Thanks for taking the call, Tom. Mr. Mayor, I just wonder if you could give us any information about the, dare I call it an invasion of the circuit court by ICE people the other day. What you're going to do about that if there's more of it?
All right, Mr. Mayor, the caller's question is about ICE raids happening actually in the court system.
Yeah, I think that I thank you for the question, Eric. I think that this is important to note. Obviously, if folks don't know this, the mayor does not run the court system. We have an elected clerk of the court and elected the sheriff. Sheriff Kogan obviously is already investigating this, and he knows that myself and VPD and my administration will be there to support him and his team in any way to deal with it, with this issue. It's not something that I have direct power over because it's separate from the executive branch.
All right, that's Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much. Have a good time at the fireworks on the 4th of July. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And drone show. Thank you very much.
The drone show, of course. Can't forget that. All right. Appreciate your time. We'll see you next month. And up next, Maryland Labor Secretary Portia Wu will join me. But before we go to a break, each week here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of people who've lost their lives to violence in our city and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do this to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 68 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Police have identified 4 people who were killed last week. They are Terrell John Curtis, age 39, Corey Washington, age 41, Javon Simmons, age 31, and Danilo Punnett. He was 24 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.